It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Here comes the 3-2 pitch. Swinging a high fly ball deep right center field. Back is Carl Armstrong near the fence, leaping up. He made the catch. He took a home run away from Max Muncy, and the Cubs win the ball game. Pete Crow Armstrong with a dazzling display of defense tonight.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse.
Brian McGuffey, Bruce Levine here on Inside the Clubhouse here in the 10 o'clock hour. We have a special guest joining us on the phone line. The Score Hotline is presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book.
My good buddy and bench coach for the Chicago Cubs, Ryan Flaherty, nice enough to get up early in Colorado and talk some baseball. Good morning, welcome, and have you recovered from the ups and downs of last night's game?
Bruce and Ryan, thanks for having me on. I'm actually recovering from catching my breath after going to walk to Starbucks this morning, so that's what I'm doing currently.
I would get that second shot of high octane in there if you have to. I'm just curious. Ryan and I started talking today at the beginning of the show about recovering from a pitching error. Okay. How do professionals like yourself, the staff, other players, get your head around, you know, two really good pitches by Pearson and then a mistake that, you know, ends up really changing the dynamic of the game?
Yeah. Obviously he knows and wishes he could have had that pitch back. Is it a mental mistake? No, I certainly don't think it's a mental mistake. He's obviously not trying to throw that pitch in an area that the guy can really even, you know, put the bat in the ball. But due to the place we're playing in or whatever it may be, he wasn't able to get the ball where he tried to get it. And we paid the price. So more execution. It was a mental mistake. And just try to bounce back from it today.
Ryan, you know, Bruce and I have been doing the math here. And you never want to be in a scenario where you're – using math to try to help your playoff positioning as it comes down the stretch here in September. How are you guys as an organization, knowing that the odds certainly are kind of stacked against you here down the stretch, knowing that you have to get wins, but at the same time blocking all of that noise just to go out and bounce back from not just last night, but the last two games, quite frankly?
Yeah. Really, I think this last month, we've obviously been able to play more consistently. And really, it's been, without looking at, what's really going on. Obviously, everyone knows the situation and where we're at and what needs to be done. So everyone's tough. Obviously, they become tougher as you lose them down here in the stretch. But, with that being said, there's 15 games left and, there's still a lot to be accomplished here, and we're certainly not out of it yet.
You were a professional player and a major league player for most of a decade. You've been a coach in the big leagues now. You were a former number one pick. When you look at certain situations as far as moving forward and looking at the Cubs this year, how much, can you look at, and again, we've discussed here about the player development for so many players on this team this year, pitchers that did extremely well at the beginning of the year and got hurt, guys like Imanaga, who have been a sensational player, one of the best stories in baseball, player growth at catcher, first base, third base, center field. How much of that positivity can be taken as a success in a season where you're not sure if you're going to get into the playoffs or not?
Yeah, I mean, the silver linings are nice for sure. I mean, I don't, it's obviously not the ultimate goal, and we know what the ultimate goal is. That being said, like, I, like I said, this past month, certainly, you know, it was more of what this team is capable of, and being able to put up runs consistently. And, you know, we've really pitched well the whole season and played good defense. But, you know, I think this past month is certainly more of a blueprint of what, you know, this team's capable of doing. And, you know, there certainly have been those player development success stories, whether it's Pete, Shota, you know, Miguel, and those have been fun to watch as the season's kind of gone on.
How difficult has it been, and for lack of a better term here, but let's say piecemeal the back end of a bullpen. Obviously, Hector is gone, and, you know, he had his ups and downs earlier this season, but we were talking earlier on the show about the teams in first place, and not everyone has a true back-end Josh Hader-type guy, that there are teams that have 12 or 13 players that have recorded a save and that they're in first place. But when you are putting guys out there in big games where you need them because you have no other options and a pitch isn't executed or walks are happening, how do you guys maneuver that knowing that you don't have a guy that's done it time and time and time again on the back of his baseball card?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's more of a sum of the parts bullpen, and there's been certainly parts of the year that it was certainly right and what it should look like. And, you know, injuries can hurt that, and multiple injuries and certain situations. So, you know, I think for the most part, guys have, you know, picked up their spot in the rotation down there and where they're supposed to come in. And, you know, it's how bullpens are put together in this game and the modern day age is certainly, you know, each one's unique and, you know, there's different ways to do it. So, you know, for the most part, they've done their job. As I said, there's been certain areas when we were more healthier than other areas or parts of the year. So, yeah.
How has the dynamic gone for you as a bench coach for Craig Counsell, somebody you didn't really know all that well coming in from San Diego yourself, him coming from Milwaukee, being a part of that coaching staff? And then what have you learned about Craig Counsell that you didn't really know before about the competitor and the intellect of the guy?
It's been a great 8 months, honestly, and you have a silver lining. And just being able to be around Craig every day and, you know, as a younger coach and, you know, still trying to learn yourself as a coach in this game, just to be around him and the way he just goes about his every day and sees the big picture but yet focuses on the day, his wittiness, his ability to connect with, you know, coaches, staff members, players, it's special, and, you know, I don't say that lightly. So that's been, you know, from a personal standpoint, a silver lining, like you said earlier. And, you know, he is very competitive, and, you know, but it's been great just to be around him every day.
He talked to me about, and I shared it with you as well, but I'd like to share it with the audience and Ryan here, the idea of you guys sitting around having headspace, you know, sit-downs for 45 minutes, an hour at a time with all the coaches. How valuable is that? How consistent is that from what you've seen before on the other teams that you played on and coached on? How valuable is that for you guys moving forward as a coaching staff and also just, you know, sharing knowledge with each other as you move on week to week, day to day?
Yeah, I think it's huge. I think just, you know, and then the total organization, not even necessarily just coaches. And that's been, you know, I think that's gotten better as the season's gone on. And like you said, it maybe not planned structured meetings, but, you know, every day at some point in that coach's room, you know, there's 15 people in there and there's ideas going around and there's, you know, healthy disagreements, healthy agreements. And I think that's how you grow as an organization. And Counts has certainly done that with this group and this organization and, you know, really inviting people to share their thoughts and all kinds of different people. And, you know, people have a chance to disagree and agree. And I think a lot of good has come out of those discussions that, you know, we've been able to have in there.
Look, I know I talked earlier about blocking the noise, but, like, you're human, so I'm assuming late in the season, knowing what you need to achieve to get to where you guys want to go with 15 games left. Do you guys scoreboard watch? I mean, are you sitting there looking at the Mets games going, or the Braves games going, okay, like, all right, they're down 7-1, we're up 6-1, like we're starting to do the math, or do you try not to? But I feel like human nature, and with you having a player background, it's hard not to get caught up in that, because a lot of teams would love to be in a position right now to be scoreboard watching that are not.
I mean, yeah, it's there. There's no doubt about that. And I think, you know, as beautiful and great as a place of Wrigley is, you can't avoid the fact that the big scoreboard in center field is sitting right there in front of you. Some of these other stadiums are tucked away, so you don't have to sit there and stare at it all the time. So, but yeah, I mean, I know everyone's going to at some point in the day look up there and, you know, see the certain games, which we all know which games they are, and you know, see what's going on. So, you know, it's there. And you know, you could try to block it out. You could try not to look, but you know, every person in there is going to look at some point.
I wanted to ask you about Michael Busch too. I know we've talked a little bit about silver linings, but you know, he did it again last night. I feel like time and time again, he's got 18 homers. I feel like almost every one of them has been a clutch spot. Where would this team be without the development and the season that Michael Busch has put together, not just at the plate, but he's become a better first baseman as well.
Yeah. Like the end, you just said the defense is, you know, it's been just fun to watch him play defense and, you know, where he's at right now. I think, you know, Jonathan's done a great job with, you know, helping him. And honestly, just what he's meant to the offense, he's been consistent, pretty consistent the whole year. Each month he's, you know, done what he's supposed to do. And he's just really grown as a player and his confidence level. And, you know, he's been a staple in that lineup and defensively. And like you said, had he not been here, you know, certainly would have been a different situation. So it's been great to watch him for the year.
Ryan Flaherty, the bench coach of the Cubs, with us for just a few more minutes on Inside the Clubhouse. He's McGuffey. I'm Levine. We're here for you, regardless of what you think, 52 weeks out of the year. Flash, when it comes to two players, I want you to give me your opinion on two players. And they are Pete Crow Armstrong 1 and Pete Crow Armstrong 2. Tell me about both of those players.
Ask that question again, Bruce.
I'm asking you about the original Pete Crow Armstrong that you got in spring training in the first part of the year and the Pete Crow Armstrong we're seeing right now.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the thing is with Pete, everyone recognizes right away with his ability to play defense and run, you know, the floor, what he needs to do offensively is so low. And even as he was going through the offensive struggles throughout the year and, you know, even parts of spring training, you know, there's just such a leash and a leeway of time that he's going to have to figure it out. And I think the unique thing is, even, you know, the first thing you bring up Pete, people are quick to question, you know, his offensive ability, is that he's hit every year. And, you know, when you actually look at, you know, the so-called back of the baseball card in the minor leagues, you know, he's put up some pretty impressive numbers offensively. So I think that just goes to show, you know, how good he is defensively and how good he is in the base pass and how he impacts the game there. And, you know, like you said, Pete Crow Armstrong, too. He's, you know, obviously brought something with the bat over the course of the last, you know, really 2 months. So, you know, the sky's the limit for the kid. And I mean, when you can play defense and run like that, you know, you get the ability to really impact games every night.
How exciting is it for you as a baseball fan, not the coach, not the guy invested in every play, every second of a game, but the baseball fan to watch a baseball athlete like Pete?
Well, it's exciting, and it's, you know, it's like you hope almost time, you know, he gets a chance to get, you know, get on first with nobody clogging a base ahead of him, just so you can, you know, watch as a fan and his ability to steal bases and his instincts he has to do that. I think that's even one of the more impressive things is, you know, he's just allowed to run when he wants to run because of the ability and trust he showed counts, and he makes smart decisions on the base path. And not many young kids just have the freedom to do that. And I think counts has really trusted him to, hey, when you get on there, do your thing. And he's certainly done that. So as a fan, you know, it's fun to watch Pete get up to bat with nobody on first, as he has the ability to get on there and make something happen. And, you know, he's obviously done that a ton this year.
Keeping the fan hat on, last question I have for you. And you've seen Judge and you've seen Otani, obviously, this year. But who is a player that is maybe not named Otani or Judge from the opposing side that's made you stop and watch as a fan?
Well, one guy that comes to mind, I think just the underratedness of him. We played him earlier this year in Cleveland's Jose Ramirez and what he does and, you know, just the staple that he has. And, you know, you mentioned players in baseball, and I don't think he's certainly usually not the top 10 names in baseball, but, you know, watch him, you know, in all three aspects of the game is pretty special. The way he runs the bases, you know, his offensive ability and what he's done for that Cleveland offense. You know, I think he's one of the more underrated players in the game. So just give him some love there.
Is it back to bed or another stop at Starbucks for you the rest of the morning?
Well, I got my breath caught now, so I'll just sit here and watch a little college football and head over to the yard here in a couple hours.
Flash, thanks for taking the time with
me and Ryan
today. You know, it's always a joy talking baseball with you at the ballpark, and thanks for taking some time out today. Have a great day.
All right, appreciate you guys having me on.
Thanks, Ryan. Ryan Flaherty, Cubs bench coach. That was a great interview. I loved, you know, look, he's wearing it, right, Bruce? I mean, that sounds like a guy who is trying to get today's game, frustrated about last night's game, knows the challenge ahead of him, but then the positivity of, well, we got 15 left to try and go get him. Like that, to me, that's a baseball rat, right? Like that's a guy who just, he's so in it that the big picture is still in front of him until somebody tells him mathematically it's not.
Ryan, this is a time of year for baseball scouts and baseball coaches to be extremely busy and also extremely concerned about their jobs for the future. It's a combination of things. If the team works out, if they get in the playoffs, will that coach be viewed differently about moving forward? If the team is in the playoffs and you need your professional scouts to go out and scout six or seven different teams to be ready for the playoffs, advanced scouting. With less scouts being involved these days, more scouting on TV, is that impactful for them keeping their jobs? These are all things that are happening right now at the same time for baseball scouts and baseball coaches. It's an exciting time. It's an uneasy time as well.
Yeah, and that's the part. No one, again, fans try to step. They don't really care about the human element part of it. But at the end of the day, that's why we ask as a fan. That's why you ask Ryan as a fan about Pete Crow Armstrong. As a fan about who are the other players in the league that stop and take your breath away just for a second. Because at the end of the day, we're all getting up and put our clothes on the same way. And we're all,
maybe you do. Maybe. I need a lot of help.
Well, I'm glad that you were able to figure it out this morning.
I hired a person.
That's good. Well, again, I'm glad that you just came in with pants on. That's an important part of this. So
it's a good start to any day.
But no, like it's human nature to look up at the Wrigley scoreboard and say, "Hey, the Mets are they're down 5 in the 6th. We're in a good spot here, knowing that look, the odds are against you. 13-2. I think I really don't see any wiggle room around that, Bruce. I think 13-2 is accurate. But again, with the way you look at the Cubs schedule right now, the rest of the year, the way it's probably as favorable or the most favorable of any team that's truly chasing in the game.
The Wrigley type scoreboard should be in every single ballpark, exactly in the same position as the one at Wrigley. Why? Because the drama of the intense baseball fan to see, okay, the Mets are winning 2-0. Oh, they just put a 3 spot on the board. Every other scoreboard, outside of maybe one or two that has old style, you don't see how that game was impacted, when the game was impacted, how it changed, how a new relief pitcher is in because they changed the number of the relief pitcher that's coming into the game. So, you know, some of that old school stuff, I think, really still resonates with baseball fans.
Now, do you think the White Sox new ballpark should have such a scoreboard as well?
They should have a scoreboard. They don't need one right now. that's an unnecessary part of Sox games right now, especially their side of it, because there's not a lot of points up there always.
Oh, there are. It's just usually the other way around. Of course, when you're playing the A's, runs are at a premium there too.
Well, yeah, 18 shutouts. You know, some of those games they didn't really need a scoreboard for theirs. And we're not piling on the White Sox. We're just dealing with the harsh reality of a season that's going to be historic in a way that isn't necessarily the greatest in the world. But again, your opinions matter. 312-644-6767. Bottom of the hour, Steve Stone joining us to talk a little White Sox baseball.
Yeah, I think we sit in this seat a week from now. Okay. We have two against Oakland after today. We have three against Anaheim, who's 9-21.
Don't go to negative town on me now, Ryan.
I'm asking you a question.
I don't live in that part of town.
Well, sorry, we're taking you there. Will we be sitting here?
Are you taking an L or are you taking a
Well, you're definitely opposed to taking the L. You want to take public transportation to a spot currently that doesn't have it.
Well, we'll invent it before the show is over.
Will the White Sox have 121 losses as we sit here a week from today?
They probably will. Yes, I think so. And again, it shouldn't be any revelation that I would say that or that people feel it. It's just, you know, run production is the essential thing for winning games. And, you know, you always say pitching. In the White Sox case, it's, you know, they're averaging among the lowest runs scored per game in history. So scoring enough runs to win a game is the problem for the White Sox. They've had, Ryan, tons and tons of well-pitched games.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? Games that, most teams would win if you had any run production whatsoever. But, you know, 18 shutouts and never having come back in over 90 games, almost approaching 100 games after the sixth inning to win a game, sounds like an impossibility. But such is the White Sox season of 2024.
Yeah, and a guy like Chris Flexen, you know, kind of gets screwed because he has a 1.1 WAR this season, folks.
Pretty good.
To have a Major League Baseball record of 20 straight starts without a win is not on Chris Flexen, because he had plenty of starts in there where he left with a lead or had quality starts and it just didn't work out for him. That's the type of season the White Sox have had. We got to catch a break because the great Steve Stone is going to join us on the other side. Bruce Levine, Ryan McGuffey, 312-644-6767. If you want to hop on the phone lines, we got plenty to get to. It's Inside the Clubhouse.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
And now we welcome to Inside the Clubhouse 1980 American League Cy Young Award winner and current White Sox TV analyst, Steve Stone.
Steve Stone, the legendary Steve Stone. Ryan McGuffey here with Bruce Levine on Inside the Clubhouse. The Score Hotline is presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Our good friend Steve Stone joins us now. Stoney, what's up, my friend? And look, a lot of people don't ever think about this, and sometimes they don't care. But when you're in a season like we've had right now on the South Side, you know, how grueling and taxing has it been for you? Because you've been in the booth during this whole ride.
Well, there's a lot of people keep asking me about how you're holding up and all of those things. Look, I get to work at a game that I truly love. It's been a very frustrating year because what happens when you have a team like the Sox this year, you see some bright spots on occasion. You actually play some pretty decent games, and at the end, almost without exception, that they come up on the short end. So for the players, it's a lot more frustrating than it is for me. As far as looking ahead, I think there are better times ahead. I would like them to get here probably more quickly than they're going to get here, but that's the way baseball works. You know, last year you got Kansas City losing 101 games, and this year they're actually a very solid ball club. So it can be turned around probably quicker than some people think, but not as quick as most people want.
Steve, good morning. Always a pleasure to talk to you on our show and Inside the Clubhouse. I wonder, has the development of pitchers and young pitchers that are going to be part of this future, have that been lost in general? I know it's not lost on you because you have a lot of expertise in baseball. Pitching is certainly one of them. But the development of, you know, the Cannons and some of the pitchers like that, the Crochet, obviously, this year, has that been lost in a season where, you know, losing is just a part of every single day, just about?
No, I think, Bruce, when you evaluate the entire organization from top to bottom, you'll realize that right now pitching is ahead of the hitting, and that's one of the big problems is scoring runs for this team. I like some of the young pitchers. I think there's a chance for some of them to kind of meld into a very solid rotation as soon as next year. I mean, Noah Schultz is going to come up. The first-round draft pick out of Arkansas, Smith, is looks to me like he's got a chance to be pretty good. And I know he's going to be here next year. Don't know exactly what time, but I think Hagen Smith was a good draft pick. And it gives them some insurance in case you decide to move one of the left-handers. So I think that pitching is ahead of the hitting in the organization, but one of the things that has to happen is they got to find some guys who can produce some runs, maybe get a little more speed in the entire lineup. But, you know, they're going to sit back, and we talked to Chris Getz yesterday on the air. They're going to sit back when this season is over, and they're going to take a look at every aspect of what this organization is and figure out how many holes they can fill with the resources they have going into next year. And I think one of the things that probably doesn't need to be addressed is the starting rotation. Now, the bullpen, that's another story.
Steve, we heard Chris publicly, he didn't come out and say, we're trading Garrett Crochet, but in his comments, and as you mentioned, he was on the air with you last night for our Friday Night All Access game, and he did say, look, you got to think about this when you look at the timeline of the control of 2 years left with Garrett Crochet, where they are as an organization and what he could bring you. And let's be honest, as many people that wanted him moved at the deadline, you're talking about three or four clubs that maybe lined up with you. Now you open it back up to knowing exactly where all the other teams in baseball are feeling, and they'll know their resources. They'll know what they have to spend. We'll know at the end of the playoffs if some teams got knocked out early because they didn't have enough pitching, if that makes them a little bit more desperate. And you talked about the hitting. Look, the hitting has been historically bad. This has been a historically bad season. And when you look at the cupboards, they're not all that full with offensive prowess behind this season. So when you look at maybe the possibility of trading a Garrett Crochet versus extending him, is this something where you try to get this right from the offensive end? And how important is the Garrett Crochet trade? If you were doing that, you have to get it right. Is that seems like it's a no-brainer, right? You have to get this one right.
Well, I think there's a lot of things that go into it. And one of the things is when you make a trade, Ryan, you always make a trade from strength. So let's assume they had one top-of-the-line hitter and that's all you had was one. You're not going to trade that top-of-the-line hitter because that's not your strength. The strength of this organization is in pitching, and so that's where you trade from. And I'm not saying that it's necessarily going to be Garrett Crochet. That would seem to be an obvious choice because of what he brings you back. But that's a way that you can shore up the offensive aspect of this organization, is moving a top-quality guy, understanding that when you do move him to whatever team you move him to, you're giving them a number one or certainly a number two in their rotation. You're giving him a top-of-the-rotation starter that has proven that he can start the whole season, which is important. And you mentioned it, 2 years of control is a very important thing when you're dealing, because what they're dealing for the most part, yes, they're dealing personalities, but they're also dealing contracts. And when you have 2 years of you're going to keep him around for 2 years, that's pretty valuable in this day and age of baseball. So looking at what you have and looking at what you have to trade and looking at what you're going to get back, it would seem to me, although you hate to get rid of a guy, that number one is a wonderful presence in the clubhouse. Number two is a hardworking guy. Number three is a top of the rotation talent. You know, there's some brainstorming that has to go before that. And when they sit around and think that pitching is the strength, so you have to deal from
the pitching aspect of the organization, then you say, well, who's it going to be?
When Mark Kotze, the manager of the A's, comes into town, they have their hitters meeting before the first game against the White Sox. The conversation pretty much goes like this. Look, regardless of what you guys do, pitch around Luis Robert. We'll make do with the rest. There's nobody really very much other than Vaughn that can hurt us in this lineup. So this is all prefaced, the question's prefaced by the idea that has anyone been more impacted by a not-so-good offense than Luis Robert Jr. In baseball this year?
Well, I think although Luis has, he's kind of tightened it up as far as swinging at pitches out of the strike zone, he still falls into those patterns of, especially with a right-hand pitcher, when he starts swinging at sliders low and away out of the zone, he continues to swing at them sometimes throughout the game. I think maybe last year they would game plan around Luis Robert. This year, hitting in the two teens, I'm not sure that that's a huge aspect of it. You look at the home runs he's hit, not a whole lot. You look at the runs he's driven in, certainly not a whole lot. So that wouldn't be the guy that you'd game plan around, because one of the things that he's been doing, now, this isn't the last couple of games, but one of the things he's been doing is stealing a lot of bases.
Right.
Excuse me for one second. So stealing a lot of bases, that puts him on second base if you do pitch around him and you walk him, and then a base hit scores him. So I don't think necessarily that's the game plan around Luis Robert. Now, maybe with assorted left-handers, you might think about that. Most of the right-handers have not been pitching around him, except maybe in a situation late in the game where he can really hurt you. And then, you know, the guy behind him is swinging it pretty well, whether it's Benintendi or Vaughn. They're both hitting the ball pretty well right now. So I don't think pitching around Luis is the game plan now, but nobody's really hitting on this team consistently, although Vaughn has done a really nice job of it, as has Benintendi. But for the most part, offensively, as you've seen, the proliferation of shutouts and everything else that goes with it, you can't generate any runs, and that's going to make it very difficult to win baseball games.
If your scout A, B, and C on the Phillies, Mets, Yankees, and you're thinking about trading for a center fielder and a previous top five player in the game, what do you think teams are looking at in Luis Robert as they try to project him in the trade market next year?
Well, I think one of the things, Bruce, that they always look for is durability and health. I remember Eloy Jimenez said in spring training that the goal was to get 150 games played out of Eloy and Yoan and Luis. They might not get 150 games between all of them. So you're looking at health, that's a big factor. And, you know, look, the Orioles didn't give up very much to get Eloy, and he can hit. There's no doubt about that. And he's, you know, he's done a pretty nice job of hitting for them. So in a low return trade, that's not necessarily a bad idea. But if you do entertain the idea of trading Luis Robert, you're going to want a whole lot back in return. And then you have to find a team who realizes just as recently as last year, the man hit 38 home runs, and I think he drove in 80 runs, played a lot of the games, most of the games, as a matter of fact, and was very valuable. Well, you're thinking that he's going to be able to get back to those numbers, and that would make him certainly desirable for a lot of teams. But they're going to take a look around. He's an excellent center fielder, as we've seen, and that's something that teams will take into consideration. The fact that he can steal a whole lot of bases is also in consideration, and as recently as last year, he had a lot of home runs. So I think there'll be some teams very interested in him. And it comes down to the question it always comes down to is, what are they willing to give in return?
Do you think he's better off suited as like a going to an organization that has 3, 4, 5 guys already in that stable of leadership and production, and he can kind of just go plug and play, go play Gold Glove type center field, fall in his spot in the lineup, and maybe the spotlight is not something that he has been comfortable wearing? And some of the, and look, the default spotlight in this town on some of these players, just because, well, this is the contract he signed, so now he's the guy. A lot of these guys have not been comfortable in that role in the last 3 to 4 years. Do you think that he better suits in an organization where he can just kind of go and play and not have to worry about the contract, five to a player the key to the rebuild?
Well, I think one of the things that's going to happen, if in fact they do entertain trading him, he's not going to go to an also-ran team who doesn't have stars, because they would have very little use for him. He's going to go to a team that they need an offensive piece, a guy who can play defense, a guy who can run, and they might be looking at him as the missing piece to help them get into and possibly win the World Series, get into the playoffs, certainly. And if that's the case, then he's going to go to a very good team, and that team is going to have stars. That team is going to have two or three stars, and Luis is going to fit in with one of them. So it would make no sense to trade for him for a team that's going to finish up the track, because he doesn't do that much for you in that respect. But as a guy who comes in and can add a whole lot to what already is there, then he becomes pretty valuable. And also, with some of these top-of-the-line organizations, they've got very strong farm systems, and you take a look at what they have, and then comes back to, you know, what can you get for him in return? So I don't think he's going to go to a team with no stars. He's going to go to a team, like you mentioned, where he's going to be a complementary player, but a pretty good and talented complementary player. So I look for the fact that there will be interest in him, although not as much interest if the Sox decide to move Garrett Crochet.
Steve, you've seen, there's nothing that surprises you in this game. I know you've said it in the booth time and time again that, you know, expect the unexpected, because this is baseball.
Yeah.
But is there any scenario prior to the year that you would have seen this, that we're talking about 120-plus losses?
Well, 120-plus losses, if they get to that number, is staggering, as you know. It happened one time in the modern era, and that was the Mets in 62, and they were an expansion team. So, no, I don't think you could possibly predict this. Now, for those who are paying attention, and we have a lot of rabid Sox fans, we have fans that still are very much in support of this organization and would love nothing better than to see a very good team, at least the makings of it, start next year. But I think the general manager, Chris Getz, in this respect, probably tipped off what he felt and a lot of people felt about this organization. When you trade your number one starter before the season starts, you're pretty much saying, you know what, it's going to be a tough year for us. And of course, it was a very tough year for the Sox. But no, you couldn't see an all-time record for futility as far as the Sox were concerned this year. However, as you know, the bullpen had some problems. Offensively, this team just hasn't done it. And then, of course, at the trade deadline, you trade away a lot of serviceable pieces, and you just keep getting worse. And so, you know, this was predictable when you went into it, but you couldn't foresee it before the season started. You didn't foresee three guys going down within the same week, which is exactly what happened. And then, of course, the trading of Cease Early and then the unloading of assets at the trade deadline. You put everything together, and it spells a really, really difficult year.
You could catch Steve Stone on NBC Sports Chicago tonight at 6 o'clock when the White Sox host the A's. Steve, we always appreciate you joining the show, and enjoy it down the stretch, because it's like, as you said, you get the opportunity to call baseball every day, and regardless of the season, you've done a great job for so many years, so we appreciate you.
Thank you, Ryan, and mercifully, this season will come to an end in the not-too-distant future.
Take care, buddy.
Hey, Bruce, we got a little giveaway here. Okay, so shout out to all the people who are still on the phone lines, and for those of you who are still waiting to get on the show, 312-644-6767, the sixth and seventh caller to 312, I'm sorry, this will be a different, for this is the contest line, 312-540-0670, 312-540-0670, sixth and seventh caller. You will win a pair of tickets to see Mullion Hall live broadcast in the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Stage on Wednesday, September 25th from 5:30 to 10 a.m., which features an appearance from Bulls head coach Billy Donovan in the 8 o'clock hour. Once again, 6th and 7th caller right now, 312-540-0670. You'll win a pair of tickets to see Mullion Hall live on September 25th. Call now. We'll be right back to wrap things up on 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse.
Ryan McGuffey here with Bruce Levine as we wrap things up here on Inside the Clubhouse. Remember, before Chicago takes on Houston, tune in tomorrow night from 5:30 to 7:20 after the Cubs game for the Your Local Ford Dealers pregame show right here on 670 The Score, presented by Aurelio's. Join Mully, Olin Krutz, and Patrick Manley As they'll get you set for the game, then immediately following the game, Mark Grody will join Olin and Manley with instant reaction on the Great Clips postgame show presented by Wonderverse. All of it can be heard on The Score and the Odyssey app. And I know how Bruce Levine feels about Shohei Ohtani pitching.
How stupid can you get? The Dodgers are talking about, and Dave Roberts came out, the manager, talking about, hey, it's not impossible that we will use Shohei Ohtani in postseason play. A guy barely a year out from Tommy John, the franchise, you know, of all franchise players, another $640 million owed. He's already one of the greatest players in the history of the game. Just as an offensive player, he'll be the first DH ever to win an MVP. What exactly are they trying to accomplish other than destroying this guy's arm by pitching him or considering pitching him in the playoffs right now?
Sounds like a chess game to me. It sounds like a little bit of a, hey, everybody, he could be ready to go at the back. I like the idea. I told you last week that Shohei Ohtani as a future closer really excites me. I know you have no interest in that, but I kind of like that. You know, to be honest with you, selfishly, I want to see Michael Kopech close games in the postseason. I do. I know how people feel about him, love him or hate him. I'd love to see Michael Kopech nail down a postseason win.
I'm with you. And, you know, I'm not a told-you-so guy, but in this case, Michael Kopech was always a closer.
You're not a told-you-so guy, Bruce?
Well, today I am. And he was always a closer. He was never anything else. He had this golden arm. It's still there, miraculously. It's still intact. And now he's got the confidence and the people behind him to help him be successful in that role. And I'm, you know, he's a great guy. I'm wishing him all
the
best.
Huge fan. Yeah, I think he's in the perfect spot. Wow, that's 2 hours really flew by. Thanks to Bruce. Robbie, the man over there in our controls. He made us sound good all day. Steve Stone, Ryan Flaherty. We're happy that they joined us. Looking already forward to next week, Bruce.
Looking forward to it. People have found me on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it, MLB Bruce Levine, on our website, 670thescore.com. Write Cubs and Sox. 2 weeks to go in this season. Should be interesting.
Yep, I'm at Ryan McGuffey. This has been Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Norse Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Norse.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one. Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.